In a year of pivotal elections, including the race for Portland mayor, KABU sat down with mayoral candidate Sarah Iannarone to discuss her vision for the city. Sarah, you've talked about changing the dynamic between mayor and city council. You've said, for example, you'd like to collaborate horizontally with your colleagues. Talk about what that means and why you believe that's so important.
One of the questions we always get asked on the campaign trail is, what's your leadership style and how will you go? And you hear Mayor Wheeler say again and again, I'm collaborative. But then when you read the news, he picks fights with his colleagues at every level of government all the time, whether it was Kate Brown over COVID or Speaker Kotek over tear gas or Commissioner Hardesty around the police reform or Chair Kefouri around the Joint Office of Homelessness. That's not collaboration in action. And we may have a high level of turnover for the next city council, depending on who wins the UDaily Maps race. So I really want to go in with my strong mom vibes, my small business owner mindset, and say, how can we start relationship building from day one so that we can work as a team? But it's also about making sure I know what's going on in other people's offices. I'm a busybody around town. It's one reason I'm in politics. And I want to know, how are your bureaus doing? What do you need? Can we work together? Climate change isn't going to be addressed from a single bureau. We all need to be working on that. Housing, as much as it may seem it comes out of the Housing Bureau, the Transportation Bureau, the Planning Bureau, Prosper Portland, they all contribute. So I've got to make sure that we're all working together all the time. It's going to be critical.
You've said when you're elected, you'll assign the Portland Police Bureau to Commissioner Joanne Hardesty. Why do you believe it's necessary to delegate this position to the commissioner?
Sometimes I get pushback about this, and I think it's important to stay the course for a few reasons. One, Commissioner Hardesty has the trust of the people on this issue. She was elected in 2018, largely on a platform of police reform, criminal justice reform, and racial justice in Portland. She brings decades of experience and subject matter expertise to the task at hand. She's leading right now on the civilian oversight ballot initiative that's on the ballot this November. Look at that powerhouse that she's created in terms of being able to shape outcomes on that issue. But also, it frees me up as the mayor to work on the racial justice issue, the police reform issue from across the city. I can also say things about the Portland Police when I'm not the head of their bureau from an HR or administrative perspective. So I can say, hey, Commissioner Hardesty, what's going on over here with this issue right now? Or why aren't you taking care of this officer? Or, hey, can we get a report back on this? So there's some checks and balances there as well. And finally, I think working alongside such a strong woman as Commissioner Hardesty, DA Schmidt, who has such a strong mandate from his overwhelming win, the three of us working at the highest level in this city can really bring our full power of our various coalitions to bear in the task at hand. I believe it's going to be far more powerful than what you see right now, which is a unilateral person trying to function as mayor and police commissioner and getting absolutely no traction. And then finally, it's definitely a change. And what I'm hearing from the public is, please, could we do something different here? Mayor Wheeler continues to do the same thing again and again and increasingly leans into more law and order rhetoric, greater level of crackdown on Black Lives Matter demonstrators. And what we need is actually the opposite. And again, I believe I can occupy that space more effectively. And then Commissioner Hardesty and I can work together on that.
So day one, you plan to discontinue sweeps of houseless community members. What services and resources do you believe should be available for houseless folks? And how do you plan to put that into action?
So what I've heard time and again is that sweeps are a waste of money. And in fact, we witnessed it for months when my campaign had an office in the Central East Side, right along the I-5 corridor. We could look out of our window day after day. Rapid response and the Portland Police would come and they would sweep a camp. And then within just a few days, it would be right back. And what you notice in those intervening days is those folks are trying to set up somewhere else. And what are the costs for them of having to do that? They lose their medication sometimes. They miss appointments because they can't. It's hard enough for people experiencing homelessness to sometimes get up in the morning and get to whatever services they need. So when we're spending millions of dollars annually displacing people ineffectually, so what we can spend our money on instead of sweeps are community safety hubs where people can go and get peer support. They can go and get access to help for the services they need. They can go have internet access, food access, addiction assistance, and even overdose prevention sites. The things that people struggling day to day need: restrooms, showers, laundry. It's basics that any traveler needs, that any visitor who comes to your house needs. This is what we should be seeking to provide people who are experiencing homelessness, and then ultimately redirect the money from the sweeps to those resources.
Can you talk a little about what you believe are the most important parts of the Green New Deal?
When it comes right down to it, it's thinking about how we are going to create jobs for Portlanders. What industries do we want those jobs to be in? I believe that thinking intentionally about jobs creation in a low carbon framework is how you create an economy that prospers for the future. It's very basic. It's not some moral or ideological approach. It says, these are the jobs that are going to be good for a longer time for more people. Some very good examples: municipal broadband. We are struggling right now with the digital divide. We could borrow to make an investment in municipal broadband for Portlanders. When we do that, those jobs for people who are now working for Comcast or, right, those are multinational corporations who don't have much care for the future of Portland as long as they extract their profits from every single household that's paying into them. We could provide that to every household much more cheaply. Those people administering and installing that infrastructure would be employed locally. We would have a say in how those jobs were allocated, who gets to create wealth based on them. And ultimately, then we have an amazing municipal infrastructure investment on the other side. So for every dollar that we're spending, we're having multiple positive impacts that resonate through our community. Another good example would be community energy and the Portland Clean Energy Fund and why we would want to invest in clean energy systems. Well, we have a housing crisis and housing costs are increasing. Reducing household energy costs, positive. Training people in jobs and the installation and maintenance of this infrastructure, positive. The partnerships with high schools and community college and jobs training, positive. So why, if we have to have all of these things anyway, wouldn't you want them to be part of your intentional economic development strategy? To me, it's very simple, and I really resist the inclination to be called a leftist or it's anti-right wing. I'm trying to think of it as forward progress. If we make these choices economically, then we will prosper with greater longevity. And that's really what Portlanders, I think, right, left, should all be interested in accomplishing.
Ted Wheeler has said in the past that he has spoken with people who he says are protest leaders, but I have yet to speak to someone who can corroborate this. On your website, part of the first 100 days blueprint is that you plan to meet with community leaders. Will this involve people who have been directly involved with demonstrations?
Oh, yes, and it already is. I mean, I've met with them regularly from a range of backgrounds and organizations. This is important because Black Portland is not a monolith. The movement is largely leaderless. We've seen different blocks and organizations of people coming together from all different parts of the political spectrum to engage in this movement and be a part of it in a way that they see as positive. And one of my jobs as Portland's next mayor, and I've said this and it's actually been circulating on a mailer against me, but I think it's an amazingly positive perspective, is that it's not the job of the next Portland mayor to end the protests. It's the next job of the Portland mayor to find a peaceful resolution to the conflict so that people feel that they're being heard and their needs are being met. My words are taken largely out of context there. So when I say that, it means convening outside, again, the usual suspects. This is where Mayor Wheeler tends to lean into what I would call the establishment gatekeepers, some of whom are being largely discredited through some good work at the Portland Mercury. But how can we tap into the young people, diverse voices, voices that are sometimes marginalized? We've seen the legal observers and the medics and the journalists having unique experiences. So talking to them, I don't see City Hall really welcoming to their perspectives, and they're very important. They've been really front and center from the beginning and have an amazing amount of information and knowledge to share. So tapping into these things more, it's almost convening people from a range of backgrounds who have a lot of diverse perspectives, and trying to then synthesize those perspectives into a path forward is how I believe we start to see our way through this situation to the next phase of truth, reconciliation, progressive policymaking that is going to be there on the other side. But right now, the mayor's approach is very adversarial. He keeps talking about cracking down, identifying the criminals. And when I look around Portland, the people who are quote-unquote criminals don't have much to do with the protests at all. It's the folks who are breaking into convenience stores and stealing bikes. And I mean, we see the kind of violence that's going around in Portland right now. And it's largely driven by people in dire economic straits, I think, not people who are protesting for racial justice.
Talk about your plans for a pilot program to provide a guaranteed basic income to 125 Black Portland mothers, and what you envision long term for that program.
I believe that by piloting something on a small scale, being very intentional about program evaluation and research in terms of efficacy and equity, we can see if this is actually something where if we were able to grow and expand it, then we could start chipping away at poverty, which we know is such a huge issue underlying so many of the things that we're facing, whether it's violence, houselessness, gentrification, school turnover, and how young people are performing in schools. These are all, right? All of the social malaise are really driven largely by impoverishment. So something like this, where we pilot it to a select group, no strings attached, no means testing, giving $1,000 a month to 125 Black mothers who we know are very vulnerable socially and economically, then if that has a positive impact on their lives, imagine what it can do when you start to increase that sample size. I believe it's hugely something that we could lead on from a civic innovation perspective. And if we have good results, imagine then how not only other cities in the region could think about this, or maybe we go up to the state level and start trying to think about how we expand this to all the residents of Oregon, but maybe other cities around the world that are similar in population and demographics to Portland, then we might be able to share that with other cities around the world too. So I see it as an incredibly important opportunity for us to try this out and see if it works.
Sarah, before we let you go today, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
I think the most important thing is that this is such a critical opportunity for Portland to elect a truly progressive mayor. Yes, it's a grassroots movement. Yes, I am publicly financed and we have a groundswell of support. But this is going to be decided by undecided voters as we head down the next 10 days, 11 days or so in the election cycle. And we need everybody to vote. So whatever you do, please turn in your ballot. And if you're really interested in supporting my campaign, visit my campaign website at sarah2020.com/volunteer. We'll get you tuned into our phone banks, and you can be a part of helping us make sure that we elect someone progressive to Portland City Council. It is going to be critical in the years ahead so that we don't end up in an austerity mindset where we're seeing budgets slashed for things like parks and transportation, even as we continue to invest in police. I want to make sure that we invest in things that keep Portlanders safe for the long term, that ensure our future prosperity, and that we have a more just, equitable city.
You've been listening to an interview with Sarah Iannarone, a candidate for Portland mayor. Make sure your vote is counted in the November 3rd elections.